Okay, so Rabosai, so what's on your mind? Let's say, Hareni kibanazai b'shuke teveria. Not really. Apparently, Benazai had a minute. He would go into the marketplace in Teveria and say, okay, open season. Anybody can ask any questions. So the Gemara has such an expression. Somebody who's open before anybody wants to ask questions. Except if I don't want to answer your question. I don't know the answer.
So usually
the first one is the hardest. It's nice to break the ice.
So what does Rabbi say about nowadays? I'm not sure if it's a new thing, but nowadays there's a lot of people that they're Shomer Shabbos, sort of keep mitzvos, what are we thinking about these people? I'm saying they're good people.
Actually, the truth is there used to be a lot more of that. There's much less of that now than there used to be. But there used to be a very substantial segment, traditional Jews that kept certain things. But they didn't keep other things. They kept kosher in the house, but they weren't so makbid when they were outside the house. Actually, remind me, there was a program when I was in Kollel. I think it was called Project Identity. It was mostly folk based out of Great Neck. They still exist, but it's in a different form. But the way they did it then, they used to set up, one of the things they did was set up Kollel guys to learn with these couples that were interested in learning more about Judaism. So I used to do that. I learned with this couple, and they were contemplating keeping kosher. But they had this real problem, it's, how do you keep kosher outside your house? In your house, okay, I could see you. I go to work in Manhattan, how could I eat kosher in Manhattan if I travel? I'm driving someplace, how do I eat kosher? So I said, first of all, in Manhattan, there's a lot of kosher places in Manhattan. You shouldn't really have a problem doing that. You bring your own food. The idea of bringing your own food along when you travel? It was a total foreign concept. So they said, okay, I guess you could, and then you could examine ahead where you're going if they have kosher restaurants there or kosher. He says, why would God want to make my life so difficult? that was his question. What's the big deal? You grew up with it. That's so simple. So I said to him, you know what? Maybe that way you'll think about God once in a while. If you have to, you can't just go into the nearest McDonald's. You have to maybe just have a thing. Why am I passing up McDonald's and going three blocks further to the kosher restaurant? Maybe you'll think about it once in a while. Lemaisa, you can't really say a blanket answer. It depends really where they're coming from, what their background is, and so on. Obviously, it's worth something, and it's hard to, it's not a good mentality to anyway think about passing judgment on people. Where are they holding? Where are you holding? How do you know, miyodeya, you could pass judgment on behaviors and concepts. This is not the right thing to do. This is not a way to behave. This is not what you'd be striving for. When you start being down in the gavra, you need the Kadosh Baruch Hu to do that. Chveis, I don't know if it's nisyonos or I don't know what his background was. Is he going up? Is he going down? You can have two people in the exact same place, and they're completely different people. Because one guy's going up and one guy's going down. Right now, they're crossing. They meet at this point. What does that mean? So it's extremely impossible, basically, to really pass judgment on a person. It's not a healthy exercise. Because the matuelos, you have to know, that doesn't mean you have to condone behaviors. Right? That's where the kind of the liberal, Western liberal ideology has gone over the line. So if you don't judge people, then everyone's good. So whatever they do is good. I also, with the same couple, they were really, this guy, the husband particularly, was into this stuff. He took a course in comparative religion when he was in college. College. So he told me a mashal he heard from his professor. Such a great definition of Western attitudes. It's a terrific mashal for what it's doing. So the mashal is, there was this wise old king, who ruled. Apparently they have mashalim with kings too. I thought it was just us. Wise old king that ruled the country with benevolence and just, he was terrific. But he's getting on in years, and he's quite old. He has five wonderful sons. And now the question is, who's taking over? So they don't want there to be any machlokas, so they come to the king and say, why don't you designate who should take over. We'll accept your judgment. So he said, fine. He said, I want each one of you to check your bedroom. I left my signet ring, in the room of the person who's supposed to take over. So you go and see who has the ring, and don't you know who I selected. So they all go back to their bedrooms. They come out, everyone has a ring. So they come back to the wise old king, and they say, Father, you know, we all have the ring. Which one is the real ring? He says, you're not asking the right question. It doesn't matter which one is the real ring. It matters what you do with it. So what's the nimshol? It doesn't matter which religion is the real religion. It's what you do with it. You could do this, you could do that. But if you're nice, if you're good, if you believe. So this took place during, this is before your time, Rabbi, so I have to date myself, the Iranian hostage crisis. So I'm not sure you even know what that is, like it's history. But this was what did in Jimmy Carter, you know, he's president. And the Ayatollahs had just taken over Iran. They had a king, Shah of Iran, was supported by the United States. Ayatollahs took over. The mobs, whatever they were, with government support, without, they took over the American embassy, and they were holding a bunch of hostages. And they were threatening to kill them, and this had been going on. So I said, he was saying, you know, you just have to be sincere in this. I said, what do you think of Ayatollah Khomeini, you know, in Iran? Oh, yeah, it's terrible. What do you mean? I want to tell you something. He is one of the most sincere people in the world. And I could prove it to you. Because he stood up for what he believed in when the Shah was in power. He spent years in jail. He had to go into exile. He lives in poverty. Right? A great risk to his life. And he kept on preaching what he believed in. He's absolutely sincere. There's a different question. Is he right or is he wrong? There's such a thing as being wrong. But you know, I don't know how I got into that, but that's what they don't get. So why am I gonna say, when I say don't pass judgment, we're not passing judgment on a person because we don't know what his nisonos are, what his challenges are, what his capabilities were. But we do pass judgment on what's right and what's wrong. Yeah, and if you stop doing that, you're in trouble. Then it becomes, there's no morality. You know, but who judgment? I once heard a tape of Rabbi Reuven Feinstein, he was quoting his father. And I do not know Ramosha. I don't know if Ramosha had a source. It's definitely not like Rashi and some of the other Rishonim on the Gemara, but it's a beautiful shot anyway. I don't think Ramosha would argue with Rishonim without a source. But the Gemara says, that I forgot who it was, when Amora went up to Shemayim, he came back, and they asked him, what did you see? And he said, Olam Hafulcha Niroa. I saw an upside-down world. The low people were on top, and the top people were on the bottom. So Ramosha asks, and exactly what's your surprise? So, of course, don't you know there's such a thing as people who are phonies? And in this world, everyone thinks they're a great tzaddik, and secretly they're doing avarice and everything else, and all of them are going to be on the bottom. Me, the Gisa, everyone knows there's such a thing as a hidden tzaddik, you know, Lamed Vavniks. You know. So people think they're nobodies in this world, and they're really big tzaddikim. So why is it a surprise to you? He's metame. He says, that's not what he's talking about. He's not talking about phonies. He's not talking about hidden tzaddikim. He's talking about real elyonim and real tachtonim. So you have a person, he's the gadol hador. And he's acknowledged posek hador, and he was not a phony. Right? And he's a posek, a gadol hador leader, and he's mosa nefesh for Torah, and he's a tzaddik and everything else. However, you don't know what kind of kochos he had. He had such kochos that he could have been twice as great as he was. He was talking to gadol hador. But he could have been the Vilna Gaon, and all he was the Chafetz Chaim. So what happens in Shemayim? They're not so excited with him. You did a lot of things. You're great. It's fine. It's cool. But you should have done a lot more. So he's not going to be so high. Then you have another guy. He's just an average citizen. Yitaka didn't do such great, phenomenal things the way we measure them. But he used his kochos. He wasn't put in a situation where he was able to. He didn't have the strength. He didn't have the opportunities. And the opportunities and kolchos he was given, he utilized quite well. So then he's going to be the Milo. There's a great story, which I have to admit I use a little poetic license to embellish it. I can't resist. But you could look up the story. It's in the Hakdama to the Shadis and Tshuvas Hamik Dover. called Nitziv. So there you'll see the real version, and then you'll hear my version. You could compare if you want. But Nitziv, apparently, when he was a youngster, did not do so well in Cheder. Now, what people don't typically know, you know, they have this romantic notion of what went on in Europe, and everyone was steeped in Torah and learning their whole life. It wasn't quite exactly like that. Pretty much, you know, certainly before the World War I, for sure was true, pretty much everyone went to Cheder. But then there was a very big weeding out. The people who weren't doing so well in Cheder, 13, 14 years old, started going to work or apprenticing, whatever it was. In fact, there was an organization called, started by the Chavetz Chaim, called Tiferes Bachurim. Because people who were no longer in Cheder, they're 13 years old, they're not getting married until the ripe old age of 18 or 19. So what's happening to them now? They have no structure, they're working in life. So they made this organization to give them structure. There should be a social outlet, they should be learning, there should be different things. So there is. So that's what happened. So he wasn't doing well. He's a little bit of a chevroman, apparently. And the Rebbe told the parents, you know, you should send him to work. He's not cut out for yeshiva. Parents were very, very upset about it. And he heard them. He says, give me one more chance. I'll show you that I could do it. So they gave him one more chance. Itaka did it. So when he wrote to Hey Mekshel, he made a special su'uda. That he was able to get that warning, so to speak, when he was 13, 14 years old, and turn his life around. He said, and otherwise, who knows what would have happened to him. So here's where I have some fun. Imagine what would have happened if he didn't pay attention. He said, okay, Rebbe says I should go, you know, leave the yeshiva. Okay, so leave the yeshiva, go to work. So he would either become a carpenter, tailor, shoemaker, because every story has a carpenter, tailor, shoemaker. I don't know if they did anything else in Europe, but that's what the stories are. So let's say he would become a shoemaker. He's probably a fairly talented guy. Let's say he'd be an excellent shoemaker. And raised in the home that he was raised in, let's say he would probably be an honest, excellent shoemaker. And having certain hasagas and backgrounds, maybe he would even learn a little bit every day. And he would support Torah and Chesed, and maybe even be a community leader. And everyone's a very becoveted person. Everyone thinks he's great. And he goes up to Shemayim, Bezin Shemayla. And he faces the Bezin Shemayla, and they say, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, why weren't you the Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin? And he looks at him and says, excuse me? I'm a shoemaker? Is this like mistaken identity? Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, why didn't you write the Hamek Sheila? What are you talking about? I'm a shoemaker. So who'd be right? Bezin Shemayla would be right. How do I know? Because he was a Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin, and he did write the Hebek Shela. So how do you know? A person never really knows. I don't want to get everyone paranoid here, you know, like, is there still a Volozhin Yeshiva around? I think there is an Eretz Yisrael Epis, it's a Volozhin Yeshiva, you know. But the idea is that we try our best, and we hope that we're doing more or less reasonably within our capacities. And a person just could have a certain sense of what he's capable of doing, and you work on that and so on. But ultimate judgment, who knows? So you see somebody who doesn't seem to be accomplishing so much, okay, obviously if he's not keeping mitzvahs and he's doing various, there's going to be a din v'cheshbon up there in Shemayim, but how big, how little, how much, we don't know. I think our attitude should try to be to encourage such a person, you know, to grow, you know, and to do more. And certainly, if he comes from a weaker background or non-background, it's for sure the case. But even if he comes from a firmer background, whatever, he has struggles, there are reasons why he is where he is. You know, you try to have a positive attitude. You don't condone. I once heard from Rabbi Gottlieb from Or Sameach, said over the name of the Gedolim, that, you know, they do kiruv, so they have to deal with this. Is you should never say something's okay when it's not okay. You can't say sheker. But you don't have to tell them that it's not okay. You have to encourage them to the things they do. So he gave us a tzir, the Maisa Shahai. He was walking through the dormitory in Or Sameach, and he sees a guy shaving with a razor halfway through his face. So looking at that, and he has a split second cheshbon, should I say something? So I don't know, this guy, I don't know, he's coming in. If I start in the middle of the shave, he's probably not going to be so macabre. So he said, he's not going to say anything. But the guy noticed something. He noticed him looking at him. He says, Rabbi, is there something wrong? Now what? He can't say there's nothing wrong. I can't say sheker, you know this. Doesn't want to tell him there's something wrong. So I don't know if he had this prepared in advance or he thought of it on the spot. But he thought of it on the spot, my regard for him goes up a few notches. He said, if you want to talk to me about it later, we could talk. And he walked away. So he didn't say anything, but he didn't say everything was okay. The guy came over to him later. So what was the problem, Rabbi? So he said, no, it's not Bishas Maisa. The guy's asking me. So he explained to him, you know, you're not supposed to shave with a razor. Didn't he? You should have told me. I would have stopped. I don't know. Maybe you would have. I don't know. But it's a tricky business. So you want to encourage a person without condoning the things that he's doing wrong. So. Hey.
Question on the Parsha, kind of also with life. So it says that the Malach came to Hagar and told her that she come back to like Sarah, and you're going to have a son, you're going to call him Yishmael, whatever. So afterwards the Pasuk says that Avram called his son Yishmael. So I was thinking about it, like, the Malach already told Hagar that the son was named Yishmael, so did Avram have the Bechira to name his son a different name?
I don't know, we're getting into real heavy-duty stuff, you know, that Bechira and Yediyah. But you know, you remind me of when I was in elementary school, I had a Rebbe who was Balkari. He was a Bucky, you know, in the Pesukim. But he used to sometimes kibbutz with us. He said, you tell me any Pesuk in the Torah, you start it and I'll finish it. So we thought we were clever. We said, Vayomer Allah Malach Elokim. There's three Pesukim like that. See, you think you get me? I'll tell you all three. But I don't know whether it could be Avram didn't have Bechir on that, but that's not really a mitzvah of Avera. You know, naming, you don't have to have Bechir on that.
No, but like, let's say he wanted to.
He wouldn't have, so Hashem put in his head what to name him. That's not, I don't think that's such a big kasha. In life, it is a kasha. It's really, it's a philosophical issue. You know, Yediyah and Bechir and so on. The Rambam says it's really hard to explain these things. I don't know exactly what's going on, but there's Bechir. An explanation I did hear, I think it's B'Shem Derived, that. It's also very hard to hear Rabbo say. This stuff is mind-boggling. But basically, the concept is that time doesn't really exist by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Time is a human thing. We march through time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, haya, 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 v'yiyah, it's all at once. So the future and the present are all there at the same time. He's not necessarily directing it, but in Hashem's consciousness, it's already there. So to sort of give a mashal, to the extent that we can understand it, is if you see a guy walking down a road, right, and there's a fork in the road, and you go one way, you go the other way. You don't know what's ahead in the fork. You can't see what's doing up ahead. You're overhead in a helicopter, and you're looking down. So you could see that the moment he takes this fork, this is what's going to happen. There's an accident. There's a three-hour traffic jam, right? He takes the other fork. It's this. Since you're not controlling it, but you're aware of it before it happens. So in the sense, that's how it works. But it's all philosophical. You know, people have talked about. My brother told me a story. He said he was going to Brooklyn College at the time. Went to Yeshiva in Brooklyn. Went to Brooklyn College at night, and they were sitting around some Jewish guys with this guy who wasn't so frum, and he comes with this like very. The reason why I'm not religious is because I have all these questions. He says, "Hey, what's your question?" Well, you say God knows. You know, what's going to happen before it happens, and then you tell me I have freedom of choice. Where's my choice if God already knew what was going to happen? So my brother said to him, so whose answer do you want? The Rambam's answer, the Ravid's answer, do you want this one, do you want that one? We listed a whole bunch of names. So the guy got really intimidated. He said he never gave him an answer. You guys know Rabbi Mechanic. Does he ever make it down here?
Yeah.
So I don't know if he told you this story. He told us the story was, he said that he went to a school, and there was a guy in the school. The story, the background was, it was this kid, he was 6'5", big, tall kid, in this Jewish school, and he was a self-proclaimed atheist. And he constantly asked all these kinds of questions in class, and it was really difficult to deal with him. So the principal called him and said, listen, you don't believe in any of this stuff, and you don't belong in the school, so go find yourself a different school. I don't want to leave the school. Why not? Well, I'm on the basketball team. I like the basketball team. Okay, so here's the deal. if you want to be on the basketball team, you can't talk about these things in class. If you talk about these things in class, then you have to find yourself a different basketball team. So the kid said, okay. And Itaka kept the deal. So he didn't say anything anymore. No problem. One day they bring in Rabbi Mechanic, you know, to speak to the boys. So he said, but, so the guy comes over, you're bringing this Rabbi Mechanic, and this is what he's talking about. Am I allowed to ask him questions? So Prince said, yes. So then he told Rabbi Mechanic what he did. Rabbi Mechanic says, thanks a lot. You know? So Rabbi Mechanic comes in, he's giving a session, he sees the 6'5" kid, he's waiting for, he doesn't say a word the whole presentation. After the presentation is over, he walks over to him, and there's a group of hangers-on, you know, probably wanting to see the show. He says, Rabbi, I want you to know that I'm an atheist. So Rabbi Mechanic says to him, have you ever read Aristotle? Then, no. Have you ever read Plato? No. Have you ever read Kant? Nope. Then you're not an atheist. You're a jerk. But then he said, don't try this at home. But, you know, basically, you know, these big philosophical questions that really bother him. He didn't want to. So, you know, but it's not so easy. Some of these things are pretty esoteric concepts. It's pretty hard to get a real handle on it, but we know that Apitar, we know there is Bechira, and if you want to get into the explanations, there's a Rambam, there's a Raivad.
Rabbi, especially like during times like this or during other hard times in our lives, is there a way that we can, you know, have our Emunah and Bitachon saying that, you know, all's for the best and all's going to work out, but doing it like in a logical way? Not just, you know, saying that, oh, you always have to have a moon, because after a while that can really, you know, run thin. Saying a person can say, no, I have had a moon, but, you know, this is ridiculous. So how is there a way that person can have a moon and mitachon on a logical level, not just on a, you know...
Well, I don't think the issue is so much the logical level as is the emotional level, because the logic is fairly simple. The logic is that Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows what he's doing better than I do. And even though it seems terrible to me, you know, it could be good. And the simple mashal that they give, you know, you have a little child doesn't understand what the parents are doing. You know, so the parents give him medicine. The medicine is foul tasting, and the kid screams and struggles and this, and then you hold him down, you force it down his throat. And you know, my parents are the cruelest people on the face of the earth. But that's from a child's perspective. Our relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu is the same thing. Like, we think, you know, I heard a beautiful, beautiful mashal just recently. How did it come about here? It's an interesting story too. The sisterhood of the in Queens was wanting to invite a certain speaker to speak. And, you know, the Rebbetzins, my wife Rebbetzin Harris, always have to approve the speaker. They didn't know this guy. So they wanted to get a little sense of what it was. So somebody, I think Rebbetzin Harris, listened to one of his speeches that was, you know, available online, and she had some questions. She asked my wife to listen. We were driving to a wedding or something. I don't know where we were, but it was a nice drive. So my wife said, can I play it? And you tell me what you think. So, okay, listen, I understand what her reservation. He started up all these gematrias and drushes, not Chavos Chaim style, but you know what? The sister, but he was pretty good. He was okay. But he gave this is the following story. It's a true story. I said he had a student that he was makariv, and eventually the fellow married, and, you know, he had a family, and he was hitting the ripe old age of 30 years old. So his wife and some of his friends and decided they wanted to make him a surprise birthday party. It's always hard how you get the guy to show up at the right place at the right time. A surprise, that's spilling the beans. So they enlisted the Rebbe's help. They're going to have the birthday party at the Rebbe's house. And how's he going to get him to come? So this guy, also not Chavos Chaim stuff, who was into like these Kabbalists and so on. So he called him. He says, this big Makubal is here from Eretz Yisrael. He's in, you know, I have a shaykhus to him, and I got you an appointment with him. You and your wife could come. Appointment 8:00 tomorrow night, but you have to be on time because he has a real tight schedule. If you miss your slot, you're done. So I said, oh, wow, Vlad, of course, we're going to be at 8:00. So come 7:30. Problem. People are supposed to be at the party. This guy got stuck in traffic. this guy, the babysitter didn't show up right away, this, half the people are not going to be there at 8 o'clock. So they get a message to the wife, she has to stall, because I don't know who's going to be there. Now, my kasha on the story is, why didn't they just tell the guy that the mekubal is running late and it's 8:30? I don't know why they didn't do that. But for some reason, they didn't do that. So she starts stalling. So, oh, you know, the sheitel episode isn't on right. He's getting more and more antsy. If I come late, I'm going to miss my slot. And he's getting angrier and angrier, and she's stalling away, and he's getting angry. And I said, I never bother you. It doesn't bother me. But this one time, don't you care about me? Can't you come on time this one time? And in the meantime, she's not saying a word. What could she say? And he's getting really, really agitated. And finally, she allows him to leave the house at 8 o'clock. He's seething the whole way to the thing. And come in, surprise, at the party. And goes, where's the mekubal? All of a sudden, he realizes, so why was she stalling? Not because she didn't care about him, because she did care about him. Not because she didn't love him, because she did love him. But you don't see the story, and I can't tell you the story, because it ruins the ending. So that's really the logic behind it. What makes it very hard is, good, b'shas maisa, when you're going out of your mind, because you're trying to get there at 8 o'clock, I'm just a little more petty, but you know, people go through some very difficult service. It's not so easy. You know, how could this possibly be for the good? How could this possibly be the help? But I tell you just a vart I heard from Rashaya Kohn many, many years ago. I've heard it from recently too. I think he says it over. And I think it's a great vart. And the circumstances under which I heard it made it even more memorable. You know, his yeshiva, people know, is Z.A., Zichron Aryeh. Who's Aryeh? He had a son that drowned in a pool. They lived in Los Angeles at the time. I know, 5 or 6 or 7 years old, I remember. Young kid. I was there for the shloshim, for this boy. And that's where he said this word. It says, the pasuk says, B'shetzav kesef histarti panai rega mimech. Right in the moment of anger, I turned my eyes away from you, my face away from you, rega, for a moment. This refers to the galus. So, do we have any historians here? Does anybody know when the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed?
It was destroyed, I believe, in the year 2470.
Something like that. So, virtually 2,000 years, almost 2,000 years. That's rega kadon azavtich. Rachmin gedolim akatzeh. Rega katon azavtich. 2,000 years. Then, this goes 30 years ago, so it's only 1,900. So he said, you know what the pshat is? Sometimes a person goes through a difficult time, and it drags. It seems like hours, days, centuries. And then, if you're Zocha, and you come up with this fantastic ending, and everything's great, you look back, it was no big deal. Shashmaisa was terrible. The bag was no big deal. It says, when the ultimate Geula comes and we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan, it was so worth it. That's no big deal. We'll also think it was Rega Kata. And the scope and the scan of what we're doing, what we're accomplishing, what's the big deal? You know, so we went through 2,000 years ago. What we got out of it, though? But we can't see that. We can't imagine that. So it is very, very difficult, you know, I don't think the logic of it, you know, because the logic of it doesn't demand that we know why it's for the good. Right? Just like this guy had no clue, you know, why, you know, I don't want to minimize things, you know, it wasn't the biggest deal in the world in the first place, but he had no clue why she was stolen. And I couldn't imagine any reason. But, you know, if there is, you know, if we have but to have that level of confidence and so on, how do we get there? Not easy malacha. We're asking it to get very high levels of bitacha. You know, it's easy to have bitacha when things do work out. You know, not so easy to have bitacha when things don't work out. You know, it takes, obviously, we have basic tools and musar and musavis pilus and thinking on it. I think certain things that could be mechazik bitacha is to think back of situations that you thought were bad that did work out, or even if it's not you, but somebody else went through, various hashgacha pratis. Those types of things can be mechazik a person's emunah, But and just to understand the logic of it and remind ourselves, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu is smarter than us. Kadosh Baruch Hu sees the whole scope of history. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows what we need to grow. You know, so we don't see it. And sometimes we won't see it in our entire lifetime. Not every story has such a happy ending, you know. Oh, you missed the plane. And okay. I always like these, one of those stories, you missed the plane crashed. What about all the people who made the plane? I got to tell you, I saw an article in one of the Jewish papers. I was so impressed. The basic story was, it was a mishpacha of a person that got killed in a terrorist attack. It was a rather high-profile attack, the Zabaro bombing. Yerushalayim, there was a restaurant. And basically, I don't remember the details, but the story basically was, it was an unbelievable series of coincidences that that person ended up in the restaurant at that time. They were supposed to have a meeting with somebody else someplace else, and then the guy canceled, so then he made a different meeting, and the other meeting was supposed to be at this restaurant, and that person canceled, but they were on their way already anyway, and it was like a bunch of different stories, and ended up in the restaurant at that time and got killed by the terrorist bomb. He said, they got a nechama, the family said, they got a nechama because they saw there was hashgacha pratis. Not hashgacha pratis that you got saved. Hashgacha pratis that got killed. But there's such a series of steps that had to take place to put him there just in that time at that place. It must have been from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why? That I don't know. They said they got nechama from that. Because they saw Ziyad Hashem. That we understand the Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to, why I'm understanding that. So it's not so simple. It's not so easy. But sometimes we do see the Yad Hashem. That could be a chizuk for the times that we don't, and to reinforce our understanding that, you know, we don't know. We don't see the picture. Kadosh Baruch Hu sees the picture. But it's definitely one of the greater challenges in life. You talk about the scale of Nisyonos, it's definitely up there. Yes.
The yeshiva's mahalach is more about Musa than machshava, chassidus, kabbalah.
I think that's a fair statement.
if a person needs,
maybe it's an understatement.
if a person needs a burst of inspiration, and he finds that at least short term, other things work more for him than Musa. Machshava, maybe chassidus. Should he use what will give him the inspiration now, or should he use Musar, maybe be more long term, maybe?
I think, as in many things in life, a lot of it is totally unbalanced. I don't have the biggest problem with the world. A guy once in a while, you know, he likes this stuff, he'll do a little bit on the side, and this, not to take away from his ikkar, but what produces real growth and long term lasting growth is the Musar and the Spilus and Musar and so on. But, you know, people do all kinds of things on the side. So some guy might want to listen to a football game, you know, watch a football game. That's, he gets his relaxation. Sometimes there's a place for that. Guy wants to do this, he wants to do that. So, you know, I remember I had a little bit unconnected, but the line strikes me. We had a meeting. Were you at that meeting with the Vision to Rebbe's brother-in-law, Sahir Mukhevet? So we were hacking him about how all this, like, Narishkeit, the Rebbe Shishtik, and when the Hasidic kids get into this Rebbe, with that Rebbe, the other Rebbe. So he said this, you know what? In your yeshiva, you probably have, you know, the top 10%, whatever, the mamish into learning, they probably don't do much of anything else. You probably have the bottom 10%, and what could you do? They're there, they're hanging out, whatever, okay. And then you have the 80% in the middle, who are learning, but they need other things. They need relaxation, they need distractions. So what do? They follow sports. So our guys follow the Rebbe's. The Rebbe's is an Irish guy. The sports is an Irish guy. I got to tell you, I like my Irish guy better than your Irish guy. Hey, boom. Okay, you win that round. But the fact of the matter is, yeah, I'm not saying it's Narish guy. You know, they're going to be on the internet. I call Hasidus and Machshav a Narish guy, and now they're out to kill me. I'm not saying that, but we don't believe that that's where the main growth lies. But a little bit here and there on the side, a person feels he gets a certain inspiration from it. I don't think it's the end of the world. You know, as long as the tuffle doesn't become the ignorant, doesn't impinge on the things that produce the heavy lifting. You know, like sometimes other things that are more fun. Okay, fun is not a terrible thing once in a while. You know, like, get the, you know, the Rosh Hashiva used to make fun of all these inspirational speeches, you know, Prince gets on inspiring inspirational speeches, and they're all worked up, and then they walk out, and 20 minutes later, you know, they're back to where they were. So a guy was going, I like these inspirations, but I feel I do get something from it in this. I said, okay, it's just not during Seder. If you can't go during Seder, you can't do it too often. You know, place and Motzei Shabbos and Out Shabbos, Friday afternoon. Nobody does these speeches on Friday afternoons. Ben Azmanim, okay. But the that would be my take. You know, I think you can't get caught up in it. And all right, if it floats your boat, you know, you like it, the place. But don't come back asking me questions on it. That's my thing. Yes.
So I'm not 100% clear on the question, so I hope I say it clear.
If not, I'll make up something else and answer that.
So a lot of times in Shiva, so people need to be part of life, which is very normal. I think to be part of the social life. It'd be normal to have friends to go out with friends here and there. But if you feel, or a person feels like he doesn't need that, or he doesn't need that to such an extent as his friends would want to, or like anything like that, so is to have like a social life important enough to like not need maybe as much of an awesome
Listen, there are degrees, and people could get carried away with having a social life also. You know, their whole life is a social life, and not in the base measure. In the base measure, they're also schmoozing with their friends. You know, they're extremes. There are definitely people at different levels of need. You know, if a person doesn't need it, I don't think there's like a mitzvah asay in the Torah to dafka do it. It does say, you know, asay l'charav k'nei l'chachaver, but that could be in learning or other avenues. However, I would just be very cautious. Like, people have to be careful about, you know, not estimating correctly their needs. And you could do that kind of stuff short term. People can get all, you know, get very inspired in mental learning. I don't do anything else. I learn 18 hours a day, you know, even for months on end. But if it's not really where he's holding, he will eventually crash and burn. And then it's sometimes hard, you know, to pick up the pieces. So I think if a person, you know, it's probably kedai to consult with rabbeim who know you, have a little bit of a take and know your circumstance and try to get a take on an individual basis. But yeah, the idea to try to cut back a little bit on my social life in order to be able to do a little more learning is not a bad thing if, you know, it fits with where you're holding in life. But it's dangerous to overdo it. So you have to get, you know, the Mrs. Sharm, famous line, Mrs. Sharm says that the Yetzer is a mechemes panu b'achar. It's a battlefield front and back. And either direction, you could go wrong. You know, so, oh, I need a social life for this, so I got to do this, and then you spend your time hanging up, and you're taking time away from where you could have been learning and growing and doing mitzvahs and so on. Oh, I want to learn. I remember we once had a kolovad in Queens, and the question was, it's basically about the balance between chesed and learning. So you have to do chesed, but you have to learn. So my answer was, it depends, like, what you want to do. If you feel like you really want to do chesed, maybe you should try to start learning a little bit more. If you feel you really want to learn, maybe you should try doing chesed a little bit more, because you'll have a tendency, you know, to overdo where your heart pulls you. But you know, it's hard to strike balances. You know, maybe kedai if you have sfeikus to get advice, you know, from your rabbeim and so on. But to answer the question, is it an appropriate type of attitude to sometimes cut back on social life in order to be able to learn more, to do mitzvahs, do chesed even, whatever it might be? The answer is sometimes it is appropriate. Is there such a thing as overdoing it? Yeah. People do have social needs, and you could suppress them and pretend that you don't. And then after all of a sudden, you feel lonely, you feel depressed. You might not even know why you're depressed. You can get down, you could crash and burn. So you got to, you know, you got to. In general, anything in life, in general, maybe there are exceptions, when a person wants to sort of change where he's at and try to improve, it's always a good idea to go in little steps. Try a little bit. If you want to start doing some extra learning, go ahead. But do a little bit at a time. Take one step. When you get comfortable with it, things are still going well, you're still smiling, you're still happy, take another step. You know, a person should always have the shaifa to grow. Otherwise, you know, what are we here for? Shiva has a very, I think, classic shmooze that I think, you know, brings out this point. It's a parashas Vayetze that the Rashi in the beginning of Vayetze, it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Yaakov and he called himself Lekei Avram and Lekei Yitzchak. It's Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Miyachid Shemo Al-Chaim. Hashem doesn't say it'll okay on a person who's alive because maybe he'll do Averis. And, you know, I remember when I was in Florida, they named a bridge or a street, I don't know what it was, a highway over some retired politician, you know, some Chashu guy. And like 2 weeks later, he was indicted in these massive cases of fraud. And now you have your name on the street. Yeah. So Kashro is not Miyachash Al-Chaim. So why did he do it by Yitzhak? Because Yitzhak was old, he was blind, he was confined to the house. And it was a safe bet that he wasn't going to do any chatoim. At the end of the parasha, when Lavan confronts Yaakov, Yaakov says, Elekei Avram upachad Yitzhak Avi. Doesn't say Elekei Yitzhak. So Rashi says he didn't say Elekei Yitzhak, because Eina Kadosh Baruch Hu Miyachet Shema Ala Tzadikim B'chayehem. Then Rashi says, aye, but Kadosh Baruch Hu himself did it. He said, but Yaakov Nisiyare Lomarke. Yaakov was afraid. What do you mean you're afraid? Kadosh Baruch Hu said it was okay. Then why are you afraid? So the Taz in his parish on Rashi, Darkei David, says, one of his terutzim, that the reason why he was afraid that it might be a violation of kibud av. Why? Because if I say Elokei Yitzhak, I'm implying that Yitzhak doesn't really have challenges anymore, doesn't really have any challenges anymore. That means he's not growing. A person who's not growing, what's he worth? So it's an insult. So he's afraid. Maybe it's not kibud av. But Rav Shiva said, but what are you talking about? The title Elokei? How many people resulted to that title in the history of the world? I'll give you a clue. Three. Avraham, Yitzchak, David didn't make it. David was jealous of them. He never made it. There's no Elokei David. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't make it. You are giving him the ultimate compliment. Yes, it's true. You're implying they no longer has Bechir, but you're also telling what he accomplished in his lifetime. Yaakov wasn't sure. Nisari Lomarkin. You see the importance of growth. So a person always has to be focused on growing and doing more and doing better. But it's usually a good idea to do it one step at a time. Because if you overdo it, that's also an atzasa yetzer. He can't stop you. The first etzah of the yetzer is don't grow. You're good the way you are. In fact, take a few steps back. You're a little too good. That doesn't work. Yeah, you're right. What do you mean you're going to learn an extra half an hour? Learn an extra 5 hours. Do it right. You don't need your sleep. That's just laziness. And then, it pushes you too far. You crash and burn. So it's always, a good idea to go, it's usually a good idea to go and say, you don't say always, you never say always, because somebody's going to find a case where it's not the case. Yes.
But how do you know, if it's a hard talking or you're actually pushing yourself too much?
So one way of doing it is by going in steps. If you go by in small steps, you could... A good way of testing is, are you happy? Right? If you're not happy, it's a pretty good sign that there's Yetzer Hara involved. If you're happy, it's a pretty good sign that it's not always foolproof, but people could be unhappy for other reasons too. But I think when you see the guy stop smiling, that's when you get nervous. As a Rebbe, when some guy stops smiling, all the alarms, go off. Then you got... Unless he was the guy who never smiled in the first place. If they don't laugh at my jokes, I get nervous. Yeah, I don't know if it's their fault, it's my fault. It could be my jokes are no good anymore, but that's also scary. But the fact of the matter is that it's not always so easy to tell. And again, a person always has a resource. If he has Rabbeim, he could consult with them. Should take advantage of that Rabosa. You have Rabbeim here, especially while you're still in the branch. It's smaller. You have much more access. In Queens, it gets harder. You could do it in Queens, too, if you come to Queens. But you have to push. You have to run more. Here, people are hanging around the base medrash. You could go over and ask them. Don't be shy. Don't be embarrassed. That's what they get paid to... Okay, never mind. That's... that's... And you probably get more of your paycheck than Queens, too. But that's what they're here for. So take advantage of it. But it's kedai. You consult. You can talk. Sometimes when you talk something, I don't even need the answer. The mere process of talking out and formulating the question and speaking to somebody clarifies it in your own mind. I have that happen a lot of times. People come to Eitzis and they say, "So what exactly are you asking?" And then, "So what's your question?" And, "You know what? I don't really think I have a question. I got it." That happens a lot of times. So take advantage. You know, you have the opportunity. You know, Baruch Hashem, you're not in a midbar, you're not in a vacuum. It is Miami. I tell the story when I was still in Florida, I think my last year in Florida, a fellow shows up on a Sunday morning in Yeshiva, kapata, nice white beard, you know, Hamburg, whatever, looked like a chashuv guy. I didn't know who he was, but he definitely looked like a chashuv guy. And he comes over, he says, so I see him, I was, you know, in the hallway, he said, I didn't know that there was a yeshiva in Miami. Somebody told me, I had to come see with my own eyes. So I said, yes, you want me to show you around? He said, please. So I go past one of the classrooms, the boys are learning. Wow, boys learning Torah in Miami Beach. Ah, gewaldig. Go to the next classroom. Whew. This, we go to class, each one, he's just like so excited. And then take him into the Beis Medrash. We had a shtickle Beis Medrash already then. Guys learning called Torah in Miami. Who? It makes me almost feel like I'm at home. So I asked him, where's your home? I was expecting him to say B'nai Brak, you know, Yerushalayim, Cholapakas Borough Park, you know, something, you know. So he said, Mexico City. I said, thanks a lot. The people of Mexico City go, Rabosai, this is not Mexico City. Maybe, I don't know what's going on in Mexico. Maybe they're fine there. I'm not saying. You have the opportunity, you have resources, take advantage of them, but you know, the ways, you know, you can discuss these in Yonah when you have these types of shadows and get good advice, you know. I know, I'm supposed to take up the whole afternoon Seder here. go ahead, maybe one more question.
I believe I heard this from Rosh Hashiva, I'm not sure, it could be I heard from someone else, that I heard from Rosh Hashiva when he came to Maganav this summer, that he heard a shir by Rabbi Shai Cohen, and he said that tefillah was really too long. Really, we need to cut down tefillah. And it's hard for high school at this magic guys to daven so long. So then afterwards, I went over and said, so I had some ideas. Rabbi Shai said, we can't cut down tefillah. But Lamai said, tefillah is too long for guys, so why? I'm not sure in Queens they do this, but I know in Miami. Why do we daven Bahab if we're not even fasting Bahab anyways?
We do it in Queens too.
So I love
the line from Mordechai Palgan. Whose line was it? It was Shlomo Yosef Harris. I mean, he was talking about the slichas in the high school or the, you know, these types of things. So he cut in high school. I think we do. I don't know if they do it at all. They cut it down. Whatever they did. So his line was Tov Maat Beli Kavana Meharbein Beli Kavana. I guess we don't want to abandon the minhag. You know, like the minhag gets lost in entirety. We don't want to abandon the minhag. There was such a Masara, there was such a minhag. And yeshiva is a place where you try to hang on to these things. If there was a separate minhag for the high school, I could definitely hear a good case. I don't know what we're talking to in Queens. I didn't ask. I could hear a case of not doing it in the high school or doing it in a more limited way. But, you know, in the basement, like... And the yeshiva has a certain attitude, like the yeshiva has to sort of do it right regardless, even though it may create a certain burden. I remember when I was in Florida, I had this shaila. We used to daven Maariv at the end of the school day. I had many kids in the high school, junior high school. If we didn't daven Maariv in yeshiva, for sure they wouldn't daven with a minyan. I had big sfeikas whether they daven Maariv altogether. Here they daven. And as a matter of fact, I know for a fact they didn't daven with a minyan because half these kids lived, you know, in North, more than half the kids lived in North Miami Beach. And at that time, I know there's more resources now. There's only one late Maariv minyan in North Miami Beach, which I often used to go to if I didn't catch an earlier Maariv. And I saw who was there from the yeshiva. Like, there were two guys, you know, three guys on a good day. So they weren't davening with a minyan. Were they davening somewhere? So I said, as long as it was after Shkia, I used to daven Maariv. So I suddenly came up with an idea. We daven mincha at 2:45, or whatever it was. That's before plag. So there's a heter to daven Maariv after plag if you daven mincha before plag. So maybe I should make a minyan for Maariv during the winter too, as long as it's after plag, which is virtually, I think, maybe the whole winter, if not, I think so, or virtually the whole winter. But it was kind of new. I never heard of yeshiva doing that before. So I figured I better ask the Rosh Yeshiva before I do. So I asked the Rosh Yeshiva, and he said, absolutely not. It says a yeshiva has to demonstrate what's a chachin. And not only that, he said you shouldn't daven after shkia either. It has to be tzeis. He says you can take a kula dikar shiva tzeis. Somebody just recently asked me what the shiva was, but I forgot. Shiva gave us a shiva. I don't remember what it was. But the kula, that you could do, but not because, you know, many shuls daven, you know, right after shkia and this. They're not going to know there's such a thing that you're supposed to wait till tzeis. Yeshiva has to, you know, demonstrate the luchat chila. Many of the kids are not going to daven. That's their fault. That's you're not right for that. But you could help them, yeah, but not at the expense, not doing the chachir. So I think it's not exactly the same thing, but I think there's a certain concept. The yeshiva sticks to its minog, to mesorah. You start dropping things, it's dangerous. You could drop other things, you know, it's a certain chiz that we don't. So Elamai, if you focused on that and say, is it a net gain or a net minus? I don't know, maybe. Maybe it is a net minus, I don't know, I'm not sure how to be mishari that. But I can certainly hear the case. But I think ultimately it's a net gain because you're sticking to your Masari and saying, Minah, you won't drop other things either. You know, it's a Rashi used to quote the Rabbeinu Bechaya. It says that Yitzchak, when he dug the wells, he redug the wells that the Avdei, you know, the Plishtim stuffed up, that Avram had dug, and he called them the same names that Avram called them, which is okay, nice. So why did he do it? So I don't remember the exact lashon, but Rabbeinu Bechaya basically says there was no smash, there was no real particular reason to do it, other than he wanted to stick to what his father did. Because if I do that, then I'm also going to stick to the Musar and the Taros that I learned from my father. And there's implications. This is not Musar and Taros. No big deal. You can make it a different name. Once you allow yourself the liberty of making a different name, then okay, I could change other things too. I'm not even going to change the name. Then you're certainly not going to change the Musar and the Taros that you learned from my brother. So there's something to be said, you know, not that we never make changes, you know, but it's got to be a very compelling case, and we try not to. And I think it's a chizuk in general for the Masara, so try to stay awake. Tomorrow's Bahab, no? it's timely.
But won't it cause people to get, like, distaste for it? If they?
So hopefully there's enough positive things to overcome it, and, you know, like, not everything is, you know. Some people, even without the Bahab, they'll have a distaste for it. Okay.
They don't even know what's Bahab yet, so.
Some people like it. They just have a longer schmooze.
similar to Lou's question, is it better to sort of focus on your weaknesses to bring you up to a sort of balance, or to just continually improve all aspects of your life?
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
I mean, like, if you're very powerful, like if you're very strong in learning. Like going back to learning versus chesed, like if you're very strong in learning, but you're weaker in chesed, is it better to sort of focus on chesed to bring that up, or to just continually improve in all areas? Like I'm saying, like at a slower rate.
You know, it's hard to know. I think people eventually have to get to everything. Exactly what sequence or what you do, I don't know. But people should try to improve their weak areas. At this point, that point, other point. You can't do everything at once. Most people can't do everything at once. And you pick different things. It's hard to know what comes first. And again, it's good to get aces in this. But I will say one important part Rabbi Sol Salanter talks about. When a person is focused, engaged in self-improvement, it's a good idea to tackle easy things first. You know, and get two reasons, basically. Number one, they may be the biggest tyrant against you. Right? The easier it is to correct, and the biggest tyrant against you that you don't correct it. So you, in a certain sense, you know, it's a better investment. You know, number two, again, the Yetzer Hara comes in, you're a failure. You tried and it didn't work. You see, told you so, you're worthless. So nothing breeds success like success. If you take on something that works, wait a second, I did accomplish something. Let me try something else. So there are a lot of complexities. Now, sometimes you can't afford to do that. If you have some like really serious problem, you know. Yeah, I got this habit, you know, of punching people out and like that. You don't break that habit, you might get arrested. You may have to work on that first, even if it's hard for you. You know, it's hard to know, but it's complex and so on. I think my general advice to people is, yeah, you should give some machshav on what you should be working on first and so on. Obviously, if you have areas you're weaker in, you should address it at some point or another, but don't get paralyzed by that. People get, oh, no, maybe I should be doing this. No, I should be doing that. I should do the other thing. And by the time you're done, your life is over. You're 183 years old and you haven't done anything. You know, you have to keep. So, you know what? Move forward. I guarantee you one thing. Kadosh Baruch Hu is an Erech HaPayim. And if he sees that you're moving forward, Hashem will wait for you. He says, and you're together, Osei Tshuva. He says, you're trying to improve. So you haven't gotten to this, you'll get to it later. You haven't gotten to that, you'll get to that. Does that mean there's a heter? No, there's no heter. But you're better than you were yesterday. As long as you're making progress, you'll be good. You'll be fine in the end. Obviously, you should send some thought on what I should be doing now and how I should be doing it. I'm not getting it, but don't allow yourself to get paralyzed by that. So at some point, take the plunge. So pick something. I'll work on it. I'll try. You'll see what happens. I should have picked something else. Maybe. So do that next time. You know. And Bez Hashem, have Siyat Nishman. But I think I may be overstaying my welcome, and then I won't get invited back again. Then I'm going to have to freeze in the cold weather in New York. It was 38 degrees on Monday when I left New York. So I think it's supposed to be warmer today, though. Check it out.
Sounds great.
It's supposed to be nice now. So, Rabbosai Yishalach HaSlacha.